From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you guys so much. We have a great show for you today. We have rocker Nick Lowe. He'll be live with us here on stage at the Chase Bank Auditorium. But first, we wanted to take a second to celebrate a big legal case this week. You probably didn't hear about it. A federal court ruled that public TV and radio stations do not have to accept political ads. Now, this is great, since technically we don't broadcast any ads. We just have what are called funding credits. So because of this court ruling, you will never have to hear anything like this.
Support for NPR comes from John Boehner, who is able to carry a ton of freight 230 miles on 1 gallon of fuel.
There's only one name we want to hear, and it's yours. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Chris Inslee. I'm currently stationed in New London, Connecticut on the Coast Guard Bark Eagle.
Wait a minute. You're stationed in New London on the Coast Guard Bark?
Yes, sir. I'm one of the officers on board the Bark Eagle. It's the training ship the Coast Guard uses to train all of our future officers.
Now, a bark, if I'm not mistaken, is a sailing ship, right?
Yes, it's a three-masted sailing ship. It's 300 feet long. We actually, it's a German sailing ship that the Coast Guard acquired after World War II. It's 77 years old.
That's amazing. Now, first of all, I love those old tall ships. But I've always wanted to ask somebody this. You have these ships that are used to train sailors, right?
Right.
But
that's
the
exactly
sailors will then go on to serve on ships that have things like engines. So what could you possibly learn sailing a tall ship that is useful to them when they go into the actual modern ships they'll be serving on?
Well, the biggest thing we teach is teamwork, leadership. The fact is you can't move this ship without a couple hundred people working together.
So they learn to organize themselves at the back of the ship and all steer in the same direction and blow as hard as they can on the sails.
We need to get Congress up there.
That's a good plan.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me introduce you to our panel this week, Christopher. First, it is a comedian and a host of the Who's Paying Attention podcast. Mr. Alonzo Bowden is here.
Hello, sir.
Next, it's a senior editor and columnist for the Houston Chronicle. It's Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hello, Christopher.
Finally, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. It's Adam Felber.
Hi there, Christopher.
Hi, Adam.
So you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, Christopher, is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to play?
Definitely.
All right, here we go. Now, your first quote comes from a kind of infomercial broadcast last Sunday night.
Oh, my God.
That was 60 Minutes host Charlie Rose reacting to Amazon's latest plan to get you what you want when you want it. Someday you'll be getting your Amazon package how?
Using little tiny helicopters, I hope.
Yes, drones, they're called. That's right, very good. Instead of the friendly hello of the mailman, now excited kids will listen for the horrifying alien whir of a robotic drone delivering books, mustache grooming kits, and a 400-pound bomb. Oh, whoops, sorry, wrong drone. Now, the ramifications of this change to automated drone delivery will be enormous. Now you'll know for sure if your wife is having an affair with a mailman because her face will be covered in propeller scratches. She'd be like, well, she insists it's my son, but I have blue eyes, and he has an infrared camera.
You know, for one thing, it's going to be – it's almost cruel to – once Amazon starts doing this, for us to continue to use them for military purposes.
You mean the drones?
Yeah, because once Amazon – you know, Amazon's worldwide and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, so now some potential terror target – not only do they have the indignity of being taken out by a drone, their last thought is, oh, hey, it's a prison.
Maybe, I mean, the idea is these things will fly and, like, drop these things in front of your house. This might be embarrassing if you have particular private needs. You know, you don't want your neighbor knocking on your door and saying, hey, is that your tub of Vagisil that just came in through my window, Frank?
I think I think if you're ordering Vagisil by the tub, the drone is the drone is the least of your problems.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
Imagine being able to say, he once beat the holy crap out of you in a club for being drunk and unruly.
That was a commenter on a Yahoo News article reacting to the revelation this week that what person used to, back in the day, be a bouncer at a club?
I believe it was the Pope.
It was. It was Pope Francis. In an interview this week, Pope Francis revealed, he talked about all the things he had done before he went into the priesthood, and one of them was he worked as a bouncer back in Buenos Aires. It must have been odd to have a serious man of God working as a bouncer. Like, blessed art thou among women, but too drunk art thou, so go home. It is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for you to get in this club wearing those pants. Now, people are like...
Turn the other cheek, because I'm going to slap that one, too.
Now, that seems crazy,
the
right?
The velvet, like, rope of St. Peter.
Exactly. But that's exactly it. It's like, how could the Pope have been a bouncer? But the first Pope, St. Peter, right, has been working as a bouncer more or less ever since. He's the bouncer in heaven. He checks you out, decides if you get in or not. So make sure that when you die... die with a really hot friend, and you can be there plus one.
So anyone who died in the disco era just isn't getting in.
No.
Just show up in polyester. Excuse me.
It's not going to happen.
The Pope was a bouncer. I'd heard Catholic school was tough, but I had no idea that they took it to that level.
It does seem a little odd, considering his very gentle nature. His you know, he's a friend. You know, he named himself after Saint Francis, who was friendly with the birds and the bees, literally the birds and the bees. I don't think he actually was acquainted with the metaphorical kind, and yet he was a bouncer.
So what kind of club are you at where you're just working? Because I've done security. It's the most boring thing in the world.
Really?
You're talking to the other guys at the door. You know what? I'm gonna give this up. I'm gonna go with Pope. What happened in that club that you just decided, I'm going with Pope. I can't just hang out here anymore.
All right, here's your last quote.
We don't know Santa's route. Only Santa knows that. But I'm guessing Santa probably has clearance to go everywhere.
That was a spokesman for NORAD, right, saying that Santa, come Christmas Eve, will in no way honor what country's sudden announcement that it controls the skies.
Are you talking about China's policy in the South China Sea?
Yes, we are. We're talking about China. Very good. Yes. This week, China announced a zone of protected airspace stretching far out to sea, demanding that all planes that might enter it ask China for clearance. And via NORAD, Santa sent China a lump of coal. NORAD, you know, it's the defense agency that monitors Santa's flight every year. And they say Santa will cross through that airspace as he always does. He has to go to China. That's where his toys are made. Oh, come on. Do you know how much elves get paid these days?
I don't know how Santa's going to deal with all the Amazon drones underneath him.
It's going to be terrifying. This is also true. To solve the brewing crisis with China, they sent Joe Biden over there. Presumably to sort of charm them and amuse them out of their belligerent stance.
Well, he's sort of the biggest elf.
He is. He's the Patch Adams of diplomacy.
Hey, how you doing, Chinese people?
I think they agreed that they'll give up the airspace if Joe would leave and stop talking.
Carl, how did Christopher do in our quiz?
Christopher, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the voicemail message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Christopher, for playing.
Thank you, Peter.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring-ting-tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, a former Victoria's Secret employee, has revealed some secrets from inside that lingerie store chain. She says that the clerks there fight over getting to work with the male customers, getting to help them. Why?
Because they're so embarrassed to be there that they'll buy anything.
That's exactly right. The men feel so uncomfortable being there that they'll do anything to get out of the store. So are you selling lingerie? You want to make your sales goal with the next shopper? Corral a man, stand him next to a rack of the frilliest underpants you can find, and watch him just sweat money. This anonymous Victoria's Secret clerk told Business Insider that female customers who come into the store generally want bargains, and male customers generally want the earth to open up and swallow them on the spot.
You know, it's no picnic for women either. One time a few years ago, I was Christmas shopping. I had all these bags and everything. And I walk into Victoria's Secret, and a little greeter there, you know, some 20-year-old something or other, looks at me, she, bright smile on her face, she goes, "Flannel pajamas?"
Oh, harsh.
Man.
I haven't recovered.
Apparently not.
I like to go in and ask where they keep the wings. Because whenever I see a tall supermodel in lingerie, I'm always thinking, you know, if wings were growing out of your back,
then you'd have
then
something.
You'd be hot.
Yeah.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place.
Girl, there's a better life for me and you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Adam Felber, Alonzo Bowden, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Liz from Missoula, Montana.
Oh, Missoula's beautiful. I love it out there. What do you do there?
Oh, I'm retired.
Yeah? What are you retired from?
Well, mostly being a housewife.
Okay. Here's the thing. I've known some housewives, and housewives mainly stay home. They take care of things. It's hard work. But when you retire from that, what do you do? Do you go to an office and do you just stand around, look at everything that needs to be done around your house and say, not my problem anymore?
I've been doing that for years.
Oh, I bet. Liz, it's great to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Liz's topic?
Blight? What blight?
This week, Detroit was given permission by a judge to pursue its bankruptcy. But don't give up hope on that city yet. Thanks to some enterprising citizens, the city is already seeing some brighter days. Our panelists are going to bring you three news stories of grassroots innovation that could bring Detroit back. Guess the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. First, let's hear from Alonzo Bowden.
Detroit doesn't have enough cops to patrol its streets, but an inventive resident has come up with a way to keep the streets safe. Well, at least his own street and his own house. Sick of having his house broken into, the man, who must remain nameless for security reasons, he's tried everything. Security bars, spotlights, guard dogs, and nothing worked. Then he got the idea to dress two CPR dummies as gangsters and put them on his porch. The break-ins have stopped. His quote, "They drive by and they look the place over, and when they see the gangsters on the porch, they just keep going. Some of them drive by repeatedly and figure out they're being watched." Now, he knows this because he's also mounted cameras in the eyes of the dummies to record their activities. Guess it takes a gangster to scare a gangster, or maybe they just avoid the house out of professional courtesy. Whatever the reason, the gangster scarecrows work, and Detroit police have stopped by to congratulate him on a novel and clever idea, or they would stop by if they weren't too scared to stop by.
Scare gangsters, two CPR dummies dressed up to look frightening, and it's working in controlling crime there in Detroit. Your next story of the city coming back from the brink comes from Adam Felber.
The town fathers of Detroit have finally woken up to the critical elements that every modern city needs in order to thrive: hipsters and gay people. And so, last week, the city council announced an all-out effort to import enough hipsters, gays, and gay hipsters to resettle Motown. To spread coolness, style, and gentrification, along with bow ties, clever little hats, and mason jar upon mason jar full of artisanal olives. Targeted ads will soon pop up in Lower Manhattan and the Bay Area, West Hollywood, and of course, Portland, with slogans like, you have a dream of an awesome coffee house. We have a house. And you like renovating loft spaces? How about an abandoned factory? And Detroit, our cars are locally sourced. And my personal favorite, a photo of two handsome, happy young men with the slogan, come join us. We're Michigay for Detroit.
A full-on campaign to appoint hipsters, gay people, and gay hipsters. Your last story of a Motown miracle comes from Kerry O'Connor.
Sometimes in Detroit, your dream is there for the asking. Just talk to Bill Gould, a guy who was living his. That dream is the carbarinth. Anybody could have a corn maze, says Gould. I have a car maze. Gould bought the shell of an old Oldsmobile dealership and decided to use 2 acres of the parking lot as his maze area. Then I asked people to drop off their old junkers, any old car, he says. And boy, did they. Hundreds of banged-up beaters, wrecks, and hoopties in various stages of decay showed up on the lot. Gould and a buddy with a crane using a diagram from the internet piled up the cars to form an intricate labyrinth. The carbarinth opened at Halloween, $7 per person or $20 per family, and it's been a huge hit. Kids love running around in these old cars. It makes for great echoes, he says. Every night at sunset, the crew tows out one unlucky wreck and torches it, and everybody cheers. Gould is planning a whole theme park now with a car carousel, car Ferris wheel, you name it. It's the spirit of Detroit, he says.
All right. So one of these things is happening in Detroit. Is it from Alonzo Bowden, a guy figuring out he can keep crime at bay just by dressing up two dummies as gangsters and putting them on his porch? From Adam Felber, a plan to import hipsters, gay people, and gay hipsters to make the place cool? Or from Kerry O'Connor, a car maze where people wander through the intricacies of walls formed by old cars? Which of these is the real story of a new initiative in Detroit?
Well, I know I would visit the car maze if I could.
Sure.
And pay to go through it and see the cars burn and everything. So I'm going to vote for Kerry's story.
You're just going to vote for Kerry's story of the car maze because you would like to go and wander through a car maze.
Yeah, I would.
All right. Well, we actually spoke to a reporter in Detroit who covered the real story.
Two dummies dressed as gang members. They make you do a double take, and if you're a criminal, they might make you think twice.
That was Sean Lay. He's a reporter for Local 4 News in Detroit, talking about the gangster dummies. Well, I'm afraid, as you have now figured it out, it was Alonzo who was telling the truth. You did not win, but you earned a point for Kerry for her wonderful idea of a car maze, which I, like you, would like to go visit. Thank you so much for playing.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Good luck with the retirement.
Yeah, thanks.
Street, all the girls that I meet say he's a gangster. Yeah.
And now the game where we reward a lifetime of being cool with 10 minutes of being lame. Nick Lowe was one of the founding figures of the great British rock explosion of the 1970s, writing songs like Cruel to Be Kind and What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. He's got a new CD out, an album of new Christmas songs. It's about time. We were all getting pretty sick of jingle bells. Nick Lowe, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So it is awesome for me to meet you because you were behind all my favorite music when I was growing up. Your own songs, the songs you produced for Elvis Costello, Graham Parker, and all those other great bands. Did you guys have any sense right there that you were doing anything new, that you were trying to change things?
In a way, we did, yes, because when that all started, the music business had got very, very staid, you know.
Right.
And so we thought we'd do something else. And one of those things was to cause a bit of mischief, really, and kind of tear the playhouse down.
Well, what happened?
Well, we had a lot of fun. I can't remember too much about it.
That's the surest sign that it happened, I'm told.
Yeah.
Now, you've written so many songs that have been very well covered by all kinds of interesting people, Elvis Costello and Tom Petty and Johnny Cash, who was your father-in-law.
Yeah.
That must have been an interesting experience, being Johnny Cash's son-in-law.
Yes, it was fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you intimidated when you met his daughter and you fell in love and she's like, I'm going to take you, I'm going to meet my stepfather.
Yeah.
It's Johnny Cash. Don't wear black because that's his thing. Were you a little intimidated, or was that time you were like, to hell with it?
I was very intimidated. Sure. Yeah. But a lovely guy, he and June came to stay with us in our house in London.
Yeah.
And John and June would turn up, you know, in three taxis, you know, one with them in and two with their luggage.
Right.
And June dressed head to foot in mink, you know, covered in diamonds, walking down the street, but everyone loved him. I could go on.
I wouldn't mind. But let me ask you about your Christmas album. This is the first time you've done a Christmas album.
Yeah.
And what bestirred you to do that?
I was approached by my record company, and they asked me if I fancied trying to do one. And at the time, I could think of nothing I fancied less.
Yes. Would you at this point like to do a song?
I'd be very happy to.
We'd be very pleased to hear it. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Mick Lowe.
Outside the taxi window, on the way to catch my flight, I notice snowflakes playing in the ever-failing light. When he dropped me at departures, it was really coming down, deep and crisp and even, it settled on the ground. It looks like Christmas, Christmas at the airport. All the planes are grounded and the fog is rolling in. It looks like Christmas, Christmas at the airport this year. Now the doors are locked and bolted, let the festivities begin. The terminal was seething without much Christmas cheer, so I found an empty closet and I settled down in there. When I awoke much later, I was quite alone. Check-in was deserted, everyone had gone. It looks like Christmas, Christmas at the airport. I took a set of x-rays, they came out pretty well. It looks like Christmas, Christmas at the airport this year. Now I'm doing Santa's sleigh ride on the baggage carousel. At the airport, I should be at the table with all my kith and kin. It looks like Christmas, Christmas at the airport this year. Don't save me any turkey, I found a burger in a bin.
Well, Mick Lowe, it is a pleasure to have you here and to listen to you talk and sing, but we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
I'll tell you what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding.
Apparently, based on your song, you don't think peace, love, and understanding can be very funny. We disagree. We're going to ask you three questions about hilarious tales of good feeling among mankind. If you get two right, you'll win our prize. One of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Nick Lowe playing for?
Nick is playing for Elisa Hirschfeld of Chicago.
All right. First question is about peace, obviously. There was a great attempt at peacemaking that happened just recently when the leader of the NAACP sat down to talk to a leader of the Ku Klux Klan in Wyoming. The NAACP official asked the Klansman why he wanted to be in the Klan anyway. How did the Klan guy explain it? Did he say, A, quote, I have a really pointy head and this is the only hat that fits? B, quote, it's the only way I can wear my lingerie in public and get away with it? Or C, quote, I like it because you wear robes and they have secret handshakes.
It's the last one sort of sounds possible, but I think he probably said because I've got a pointy head.
Really?
Yeah.
And the cone-like hood of the...
Oh, that, wait a minute. That'd be too funny for a guy like that to say, wouldn't it? No, I think it's the last one.
You think it's the last one?
Yeah.
You're frighteningly adept at reading the minds of Klan members, because you're right. That's what he said.
Okay.
All right, that's very good. Next question is about love, of course. People like to come up with elaborate schemes to propose to their girlfriends sometimes. One British man named Lefkos Haji saw his plan go terribly wrong when what happened? A, the lion he had hired to bring the ring up in its teeth then tried to eat his girlfriend. B, the enormous helium balloon he had hidden the ring inside so he could pop the question floated away with the ring, or C, he planned a romantic rowboat ride in the middle of a sewage containment pond.
I think it's the lion.
You think it's the lion?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. I wish it were, because I'd like to be the man who says, you know what would be really romantic? It was actually the enormous balloon. He hid the ring, this $12,000 ring, inside a balloon, and he was going to pop it. It was going to fall out, but of course he let go of it, and it was last seen floating away over London. All right. This is exciting, because if you get this last one right, you will win it all. And of course, we've done peace, we've done love, now it's understanding. When the first British ship, commanded by Captain Cook, approached the coast of Australia in 1770, natives, called by the British Aborigines, ran out to the water and yelled a welcome. They yelled, "Wara, wara!" So the question is, what does "wara, wara" actually mean? Does it mean A, bum a smoke, B, pasty-faced white guys, pasty-faced white guys, or C, go away, go away?
Go away.
That's exactly right.
You know,
the British sailors with Captain Cook had been warmly welcomed by the natives all over Polynesia, so they assumed they were being welcomed again. They were not. The Aborigines were wise to try to get rid of them. It didn't work. Carl, how did Nick Lowe do on our quiz?
Two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Elisa Hirschfeld.
Well done.
Great. Fantastic.
Nick Lowe's new album, Quality Street, a season selection for all the family, is out now. Now, Nick, before you go, I'm told we have time for one more song.
Well, yeah, with pleasure. Yeah,
please, sure. Would you do so? I would be thrilled. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Lowe again.
As I walk this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is there only pain, hatred, and misery? And each time I feel like this inside, there's one thing I wanna know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
From From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Kerry O'Connor, Adam Felber, and Alonzo Bowden. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl celebrates the fifth day of Christmas with five golden rhymes. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Alonzo, the NSA, National Security Agency, needs its agents to be prepared for anything. Last week before Thanksgiving, they issued a memo to their agents on how to deal with what dangerous, high-stakes situation that might have arisen.
I don't know. The NSA, what danger could they have listened in on? I have no idea.
Well, keep in mind they issued these right before the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, right before Thanksgiving. Don't stand behind a turkey.
No.
They were warned. What, not to talk about what they do at Thanksgiving
dinner?
Well,
almost. It was a memo giving them a guide to dealing with awkward questions at Thanksgiving dinners.
Oh, yeah, I would know that.
Yeah. So the NSA has not gotten a lot of good press lately, despite their program to instantly detect and drone strike anyone writing bad press about them. So to help NSA agents heading home for Thanksgiving dinner, supervisors issued a list of talking points to address anticipated questions from the family, like, what exactly do you do for the organization that is eroding our freedom? And is all this spying on civilians the reason you haven't yet found a husband?
I hate to go ethnic on you, but you try pulling some talking points on a black mother at Thanksgiving dinner, they're going to be trouble. I'm going to tell you about your secrets, child. Yeah.
Adam, listen, please, to Carl Castle.
You pulled my dreads out, dog.
Carl. So that's what happened to them.
My bad, dog.
Yeah. Carl was quoting Arizona Cardinals running back Andre Ellington from a New York Times piece about how a top concern for many NFL players this year is what?
Getting their hair pulled.
Yeah. This has been a banner year for hair in the NFL. More and more pros are growing long, beautiful hair. It's a trend, like with beards in baseball or major felonies in college football.
It is within the rules to pull the hair.
Yes.
I mean, that's the crazy thing about football. There's so many places you can't hit, but you can go ahead and grab their hair like, you know, 8-year-old girls in the schoolyard and just yank him to the ground. So the smart thing would be to not grow the hair.
But yet they must, because you know these guys. They're so vain.
They want to stand out, and the NFL forbids wearing buttons.
Kerry, during the height of the Cold War, there was no greater secret than the nuclear launch codes that would have started nuclear Armageddon. Well, now we know, it's been revealed, that for two decades, the nuclear launch code was what?
Let me see. It was like 000... 0000.
Yes, you're right. It was 0000. You got it. 0000. So in 1962, President Kennedy said, okay, the nuclear launch system has to have a code that we have to put in to keep it from being accidentally launched. But the Pentagon didn't like this. They didn't want to have to wait to destroy the world if they needed to. So for almost two decades, from then until 1977, the launch code at every U.S. missile silo was 0000000. And if you didn't know the 000 password, or you'd forgotten it, not to worry, there was a password hint question. So you had all these launch officers going, what was my mom's maiden name? What is that?
Didn't anyone read in the manual where it says this is the password for the first nuclear weapon, then you have to put in your own password for the rest of the nuclear weapons?
Yeah, yeah, it's the factory setting. When you get the nuclear weapons, they're set to 000. They want you to encourage you to put in your own password. You know, we should be thankful it was so simple. Can you imagine if all the officers in the silos were having to deal with, like, CAPTCHA?
What is that? Was that an E? What is that? Yeah, last words of humanity. Does that say smellish? What's smellish?
Kerry, Neanderthals have always had the reputation of being our more brutish, brow ridgier cousins. But according to groundbreaking new research, Neanderthals were actually what?
Oh, because I'm obsessed with Neanderthals, I know the answer to this. Neat freaks.
Yes! They were very house-proud, Neanderthals. Turns out Ugg the Neanderthal was making hand-weaved wreaths long before Martha Stewart. According to these archaeological remains found in a dig in Italy, Neanderthals kept their cave dwellings extremely neat, very well organized. There were separate areas for butchering animals, and then here for cooking, and there for sleeping, and they're clubbing each other. It was like a modern Brooklyn condo. It was just like that.
Well, you know, now that everybody, except people whose ancestors are all from sub-Saharan Africa, now we know that everybody has a little Neanderthal in them. Like, all of a sudden, the stories are getting a lot more positive about them.
Yeah, I know. They're trying to trying to brush them up. It's true.
It's like 2,000 years from now, they're going to be like, you know, young single college guys were very neat.
Look at this ancient dorm we found.
Yeah, yes. They kept the beer cans in one place. And what happened, the pizza boxes eroded after a thousand years.
You're saying that we can't really tell.
No. Yeah. Well,
was there a single sock on the floor in that cave?
Who knows?
No.
Do you think Neanderthal women are thinking, oh, so now they get credit for being neat? Oh, sure, they did all the housework.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our first ever show in Memphis, Tennessee, coming up in a few weeks. Be sure to check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to make your own Big Bird. Hi, everyone. Wait, don't tell me.
Hi, this is Kim from Hilo, Hawaii.
Oh, Kim from Hilo on the Big Island, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I've never been there. What's it like?
It's beautiful.
Oh.
And there's rainbows and a volcano. It's great.
Oh, wow, rainbows and a volcano.
Yeah.
Sounds like a kids' television program. Well, welcome to the show, Kim. It's nice to talk to you. Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. You ready to play?
Yes.
Here is your first limerick.
This ancestral shakeup is big. Not just apes can lay claim to that gig. I just figured out where I got my big snout. Turns out great-granddad was a...
pig.
Yes, a pig. We've all been there. Many of us have, anyway. You have a little bit too much to drink. Next morning, you wake up next to a real pig. Well, a geneticist trained at the University of Georgia has now theorized that the human race was born when a female chimpanzee got busy with a pig. And this is because humans and pigs share a startling number of traits. Hairless skin, very rare in primates, light-colored eyes, and a love of bacon. Here is your next limerick.
The buyer for Walmart just growls. No one knows for what goods the mob howls. We knew they would cry for small cloths to help dry. We're well stocked, but they only buy...
towels?
Towels, yes, very good. Walmart won Black Friday when they announced they'd be selling bath towels for the low, low price of $1.79 each. That kind of quality towel is hard to come by. You usually have to do a night in prison to snag a towel like that. In any event, holiday shoppers snapped up 2.8 million towels on Black Friday, biggest selling item on Black Friday. That means 2.8 million Americans are going to be very disappointed on Christmas morning.
Do you suppose there's somebody at Walmart who's just like, all right, what else can we sell them?
Yeah.
Just throw something out there for $1.50, they'll buy it.
The last time I went to a Walmart, I bought dog treats, underwear, and whiskey. That was a hell of a weekend.
Yeah. I don't want to know any more about your personal life than that. Here, boy. Come here.
Here is your last limerick.
I don't want to dress up for a snooty ball, and I try to keep long-term love duty small. But just call or just text, and we both know what's next. It's relationships midpoint the...
call?
Well, it's a two-word answer, three syllables. Rhymes with snooty ball.
Booty call. call.
Booty call, yes. Scientists in Australia have just finished an exhaustive study to come up with an official scientific definition of the term booty call. Basically, according to science, a booty call is defined as an arrangement where sex is the only objective. Now you know. The scientists are very happy to finally have a name for the thing that never happens to them.
So now when you call a woman in the middle of the night and you say, look, I got whiskey, underwear, and doggy treats.
Burning a hole in my Walmart bag.
They've come up with a name for that sort of thing.
Carl, how did Kim do in our quiz?
Kim, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor and Adam Felber both have 3 points. They have the lead, and Alonzo Bowden has 2 points.
All right. Well, that means, Alonzo, you go first. Here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank, Alonzo. The Washington Post reported Wednesday that 5 billion records on the location of cell phones overseas are collected by the blank every day.
NSA.
Right. In a protest for higher wages Thursday, blank workers walked off the job in 100 cities.
Fast food.
Right. Former Vice President Dick Cheney said this week that he was surprised by the Facebook feud between his daughters over their views on blank.
Gay marriage.
Right. A woman who had suffered a leg injury at the mall was arrested on Monday after calling the police to request that they blank.
That they arrest her?
No, that they push her around the mall so she could continue shopping. On Thursday night, former American Idol winner Carrie Underwood played Maria in a live televised version of blank.
The Sound of Music.
Right. The National Zoo announced this week that their new baby blank would be named Bao Bao.
Panda?
Right. There was a slight mishap with the Olympic flame this week when the torchbearer carrying the flame through Siberia accidentally blanked.
Set fire to something.
He set fire to...
himself?
Yes! The former bobsledder was jogging through the cheering crowd when he accidentally dripped some fuel onto his jacket sleeve and became a human Olympic torch. He was eventually snuffed out unharmed, but set an unofficial record for the 200-yard panicked scream. Carl, how did Alonzo do in our quiz?
Alonzo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Alonzo has taken the lead.
Well done. Very well done. Here we go. We've flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go next. Fill in the blank. The former South African president and former political prisoner blank died Thursday at age 95.
Nelson Mandela.
Right. An internet security company revealed Thursday that hackers had stolen the blanks of more than 2 million Google, Facebook, and Twitter users.
The passwords.
Passwords, yes. Authorities warned that the thieves who stole a truck found in Mexico containing cobalt-60 pellets were exposed to dangerous levels of blank.
Radiation.
Right. Christine Fox, the woman who was the inspiration for Kelly McGillis's role in blank, was named to the number 2 spot at the Pentagon this week.
Top Gun.
Yes. A prison inmate in Sweden had 24 hours tacked onto his sentence after he blanked.
Left.
To do what?
Get dental work.
Exactly right. He escaped from jail to go to the dentist. Bars across the country toasted the 80th anniversary of the date blank was repealed.
Prohibition.
Right. Pantone announced Thursday that Radiant Orchid would be the blank of the year for 2014.
Color.
Yes. A British politician wants to pass a new punitive criminal law after he and his wife were the victims of blank.
It's working.
No. He and his wife were mooned by 40 school kids on their way to a rugby match. Lord James of Blackheath is extra upset about the incident because he was attempting to prove to his wife once and for all that rugby is a respectable pastime. But, quote, the sight of some 40 schoolchildren mooning simultaneously is not a pretty sight. She was horrified, unquote. Lord James told Parliament he wanted the boys locked up for a year but would settle for a fine, at which point the entire House of Lords turned around and showed him what they thought of that idea. Carl, how did Kiri do on our quiz?
Kiri had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 17 points, and Kiri has taken the lead.
All right, well done. Very good. How many, Carl, does Adam need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Oof, very well done.
That's a high bar there.
It is, but you can do it, Adam. This is for the game, fill in the blank. The driver of a train that derailed in blank this week told investigators that he had been in a daze before the crash.
New York.
Right. Because of website improvements, 29,000 people were able to sign up for blank in the first 2 days of December.
Healthcare.
Right. Officials are investigating the car crash that killed Paul Walker, best known for his role in the blank movies.
Fast and Furious.
Right. Scientists said Monday that it appears that the blank that passed close to the sun last week did not survive the trip.
Comet.
Right. For the second time in a row, the town of Walsburg, Utah, blanked.
Scarpered off.
No, forgot to hold an election. The unveiling of the White House Christmas decorations took an unexpected turn when Sonny the dog blanked.
Piddled on a tree.
No, he knocked over a toddler.
Oh.
Or she, I guess. She knocked over a toddler. Rescuers got a happy surprise when they discovered a man who had survived for 62 hours in a blank.
Rowboat.
No, capsized boat underwater. Two Canadian men performed a daring animal rescue mission recently when they blanked.
Twerked.
No. I'm sure somebody out there is twerking, Adam. No, these two Canadian men rescued a shark that was choking on a moose. Derek Chalk was driving along the coast when he saw a large Greenland shark give the international signal for choking. Chalk, with the help of a passerby, gave a quick Heimlich to the shark and then dragged the shark back out to the water. Said Chalk, "It was a good feeling to see that shark swim out, knowing that you saved his life," unquote. That feeling was tempered by the realization they were standing in the shallow water near a shark whose dinner had just gotten interrupted and who had managed to nab a moose. Carl, did Adam do well enough to win?
He needed 7 to tie. He had just 4 correct answers. Oh. So with 17 points, Kerry O'Connor is this week's champion.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the next company to use drone technology. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug, he's still down in the basement, Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall, our assistant house manager. Is Tyler Green. Our intern is Stephen Ticklish Tobias. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dalarchik and Muhammad Mao. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover, Miles Dernboss, and Emily Acton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what companies are going to start using drones and for what? Alonzo Bowden.
I say the military is going to start using drones. We're going to get back to good old-fashioned family values and use them to drop bombs and kill people the way God intended.
Kerry O'Connor.
Husbands, you know how there's that Sunday night and it's late and your wife sends you out to the drugstore for lady products? Drones, baby, drones.
Adam Felber.
It's the sleek, beautiful Apple iDrone. I'm not sure what it does, but I know I need one.
And if we see any of those drone panels, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Alonzo Bowden, Adam Felber, and Kerry O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.